Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on May 20th, 2014. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. It's located in Palos Verdes. The Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages. Now that's all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com, or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can read all about our mini adventures and to find out more about us at facebook.com/ The South Bay Show, or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining, to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with Solid Roots in the Community and a partnership with the Official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is founder and president of the local Manhattan Beach CERT Association and the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning. You're a little flustered this morning, just a touch. I know it was a tough weekend for you.
Yes, it was. It was.
And it's your last show as the guest, so to speak.
And it was quite a day, and I'm excited that we're going to talk about it. And with us today, of course, is owner, producer, writer of SouthBayByJackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I am well this morning, Joe. Good. Hi, George.
Good morning.
It's great to do this. I'm so glad we came up with this idea, because talking about CERT is one thing, but going through the training, and now all, you know, Jackie has been through the training previously, now I've gone through the training, I think that first step is something that I should have done perhaps a while ago.
Yeah, you've been talking about it for 2 years, but you didn't go through it. Now you have. Welcome
now
to the club.
Thank you very much. And it's George, it's an issue that I think a lot of people go through, just carving out 3 days in this big, crazy, busy life that we live is tough.
It is. You know, we've done the training over a Friday, Saturday, Sunday to condense it and push it into a complete weekend. In doing so, we take up and we take 4 hours. You know, it's a condensed 20-hour class, but those extra few hours, and I think you will agree that the command structure training that we did that first day that afternoon, mm-hmm. and the tabletop that we did for the first time made it a lot easier. We've added some hydrant and hose work to the fire safety side of it that we do. Mm-hmm. And then it's only been the last two or three classes where the fire department has actually taken the time to come in, hook up to a hydrant, with a truck and be able to allow our students to have the experience of getting their hands on a 2.5-inch hose, which I think you will agree, and I know Jackie was not able to, understanding the amount of pressure and the work that it is to try to work such a large hose on a fire would be something that you and I would not want to do on a regular basis unless
right.
we spent a year working out before.
First of all, it's hard work, no question about it. And we had a group of us, I think it was 8 of us, but maybe 3 or 4 on the hose at any one time. And they explained that usually it'd be a 2-man or maybe a 3-man crew, but likely a 2-man crew on the hose normally when they're fighting a fire. And it's just a lot of work. Heavy, 2.5 inches doesn't sound like a lot, but it's crazy how much water they can put on a fire in a very short amount of time to try to get the temperature down, which is really, we learned about the fire triangle, which is heat and oxygen and fuel, and if you have all three of those elements, you're going to have fire. But if you can knock down one of them, in this case, heat, then you have a good chance of putting the fire out or keeping it contained. And that's really what I want to talk about, George. Let's start at the beginning. It was fire day. Chief Kielo gave us a great presentation on fire, as he did on terrorism the previous Saturday. Can you just give us an overview of that unit that Chief Kielo went through with us?
Okay. Fire safety. It's all about prevention.
Right.
All right. What can you as individuals in your homes do to prevent fires and prevent accidents as such? One of the things that we you just discussed the fire triangle.
Mm-hmm.
People with in stoves. You saw a video about the horrors of what can happen in a kitchen fire if it's not taken care of properly.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you have a fire in your oven, close the oven.
Mm-hmm.
All right, shut the oven off, close the door. And it will burn itself out because it will take one of those legs, it will take the oxygen away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're removing the heat, which is the gas coming in, it'll eventually burn itself out. A burning pan, whether it's oil or whatever, on top of a stove, never throw water on it. Don't think you can do that. Some people would put some baking powder or something on it. But you can just take a damp rag and just put over the top of that pan, and it too will smother the fire and put it out.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about as CERT members or as individuals and fire extinguishers, and we talked about the different types of fires, A, B, C, D, and E, and the most commons are the A, B, C fires.
Mm-hmm.
All being able to be extinguished by a dry chemical, which is the most popular fire extinguisher. Mm-hmm. You can buy them at Home Depot, at Costco, just about anywhere. And you should never go buy something so small, anything less than a 3-pound and a mm-hmm. 5-pound, I would recommend, just because of the amount of volume and the idea that you may need it all. If you go put out a fire, once you use a fire extinguisher one time, you should never use it again. Don't count on it to be able to put out 2 fires. And we're talking about fires that are the size of a trash can, mm-hmm. or something that has just moved from a trash can to a sofa. But I mean, if you get in, or a chair, let's say a chair, you get into a sofa, as it starts burning, you're not going to get it out with a single fire extinguisher. Dry Christmas trees can explode a room into a massive fireball in a matter of seconds.
And George?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, continue.
I was just going to say. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's all about prevention, and if you can prevent the fire from starting. The big thing, don't overload your electrical circuits and keep lies. All right, Joe, what does LIES mean?
Oh boy. I knew there was going to be a test. Give me the first one.
Limit.
Limit.
Jackie.
You mean other than telling a fib?
Yeah.
Limit. Isolate.
Right. Extinguish. Limit. Isolate. Eliminate.
Eliminate. And S. If you had ammonia.
Separate.
There you go. All right.
Oh, and this is referring to household chemicals?
Household chemicals. All right. LIES. Limit, isolate, eliminate, and separate. So for all of you listeners that are out there,
double check your garages
and underneath your sinks, and make sure that you don't have anything there that you really don't need or you don't use. And see if you can eliminate them, get rid of them, and make sure that you separate.
Don't mix your ammonia and bleach.
Yes, ammonia and bleach are not good.
I reacted when you mentioned Christmas trees, George, because this past Christmas season, my neighbors and I collected 35 Christmas trees. And on one particular day, took them over to Dockweiler and had a bonfire where we used the Christmas trees as the fuel for the bonfire. And there is nothing like a Christmas tree going up in flames. It's a spectacular experience that anyone who sees it for the first time really is amazed how the pine oil becomes aerosol kerosene. Basically, and it just goes up like you say, in a matter of seconds. It's amazing.
It truly is. Dry pine needles are wicked. And I remember Christmas time when you were collecting those
yes.
Christmas trees, because we had thought maybe we'd be able to get them out for you, and you were going to come pick it up, but it just didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, the whole, you know, that section of the day was eye-opening, and you know, in terms of hyper-local, where we are here in the South Bay, specifically Manhattan Beach, Chief Kiello was describing how throughout the South Bay, lots and lots of homes are very close together, especially in Manhattan Beach, and so when any of these scenarios occur, whether it's an electrical fire or a stove fire or any of these kinds of events occur, and the resident is not able to knock it down, it isn't just their own home that is at risk. If the fire department doesn't get there in time to contain it, it could take over, you know, certainly the house on the left and the right, but the house behind and so forth, and it can really turn into quite a huge disaster. And in a time of true disaster, like the big one, the big earthquake, CERT will be called to potentially help in knocking down fires and or containing them. And we have the 2.5-inch hose is the one that they use on the truck, but we have, is it an inch and three-quarter?
An inch and three-quarter that we have, so.
Right.
It was interesting that a number of the students actually enjoyed being able to hook to the hydrant and utilize the equipment that we have in our vehicles, the inch and three quarters, more so than going and playing with the firemen on the 2.5. so that, I mean, they understand what our capabilities are, where with a swimming pool and our 2-inch, we have what it is, they're 2-inch Honda water pumps, gas powered, mm-hmm. where we can actually draw water from a swimming pool to either fill a fire truck if necessary, if there is no water pressure by chance, and or taking this hose that we have, whether we can hook it up to a fire hydrant or into a swimming pool and push out a 50 to 100 foot stream of water, depending on how much hose we have hooked up to it.
Right.
If we have a 50 foot hose hooked up to the swimming pool and we're drawing out of there, we can get about 100 foot stream out of the hose. If we've got 100 foot of hose, we're at about a 75 foot stream.
Mm-hmm.
But it is quite possible that we could use something like that protection to adjacent structures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, by hooking it to the hydrant, we would end up with constant pressure and, possibly get farther. But down the road, we now have the knowledge. You have the knowledge to be able to help somebody. If in a fire, if they need help, you could go up there and you know how to work a hydrant. You know that you'd have to, you wait to hear from the end of the hose, whoever's on the nozzle, somebody's going to tell you what needs to be done.
Right.
It's you either open the hydrant or you shut it down.
I actually looked at a hydrant yesterday quite differently and thought, hey, I know what the parts are.
That's a good thing. One of our other students, Heidi, sent me an email. She said she loved it. She got home and she went and looked at her fire extinguishers and the other thing is if a fire extinguisher sets around for any length of time, it still may be good. It still may be pressurized. The needle still may be in the green, but you need to shake it up because the powder will cake.
Mm-hmm.
It will settle and it will set there. So you should always, when you change your batteries in your smoke alarm, you should then in turn go find all of your fire extinguishers. And oh, by the way, let me see, you should have one in the kitchen. You should have one someplace else in a large home downstairs. You should have one upstairs. You should have one in your garage.
Right.
You should have a number of them scattered throughout your property. So you need to shake it up, turn it bottom side up, shake it vigorously, and you'll feel you'll feel the powder moving around.
I definitely feel that I want to get involved in growing the CERT organizations here in the South Bay and helping. I live in Redondo near Artesia and Ringe. Our block is very knowledgeable, but I don't know how knowledgeable our block is about disaster preparation. So I'm going to actually suggest that we have a block party and actually talk about disaster preparation in our first block party this summer.
And if I'm around, I'd be more than happy to come over, and then I will also turn you on to the Redondo CERT people.
Yeah,
because you can end up with a dual membership.
Yeah, I would love to do that because I want to get our block and our as many people as they want to CERT trained, so that we can start to figure out what we're going to do and get a disaster plan for our block. And this is the beginning. This is long overdue. the more trained you get, I think the more training you think you need.
Yeah.
Because you realize the very real danger. And one of the things that Chief Kielo talked about, and I think is really, you know, affected me and most of the class, was really we're talking about fire safety. We're talking about prevention and mitigation. Fighting a fire isn't really it's a misnomer. Firemen don't happen upon a scene, roll up on a fire, put on their gear, and rush into the house. That is not what happens. That's not even close to what happens. They do very much what we do in CERT, which is they assess the situation. You don't know what's in there. Of course, loss of life is number one, so they immediately determine if there are any people in or out of the residence and where they are and how many. But you have to really think a fire fully engulfed structure is not going to be, they're not going to rush in and try to put out the fire. They're going to try to contain it and keep it from spreading. And this was sobering, you know.
Well, and you have seen that in the wildfires down in San Diego, where they would come up on a home if they knew they could not save the home, then they would they would not continue the efforts there to put that fire out. They would contain it. And so that it wouldn't move on to another home that they could possibly save.
It's a difficult thing for people to understand in the heat of the moment. But really, it's keeping the first responders safe. I mean, you don't want them to think this is a life or death situation. It's not. It's property. If the people have gotten out, what we're losing is property, and precious as it may be, it's not worth human life. So it's about containment and about keeping it from spreading. So that was a great morning, very well presented by Chief Kielo, and I would hope that everyone would be able to go through that same training taught in that same way, because it was very effective. Very.
And then we just did a brief review.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a little lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the afternoon, we killed somebody.
Did you kill somebody this class?
We killed somebody.
Yeah.
Oh.
We did. One of those people, one of our students,
Wait. I want to hear the whole thing. I want to hear the whole exercise part of it.
Right. Okay. Let's do it. Let's do that. You're listening to the South Bay Show, Disaster in America. We're talking about CERT training that I just went through. Jackie had already been through CERT training. George is one of the instructors. And it was amazing, three Saturdays in a row. If you'd like to call in, and if you're a CERT member especially, if you're one of our classmates, please do call in at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your perspective and your comments and or questions. And Jackie, who do we want to thank today?
Well, Joe, you know it's never too early to begin planning your financial future when it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars. You'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011. Briganti, Cameron, Waters, and Strong.
Excellent. Now, yes. I'm going to have to do that next week, aren't I?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You got to do everything we talk about. Hey, guys, before we get back to it, can I just tell you guys I had a little experience with fire myself recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a little out of the box. So, you know, personal grooming.
Mm-hmm.
When I tweeze my eyebrows, I go out into my backyard with my magnifying mirror because the natural light, you can see better.
Okay.
And so I sit at the table and I get my magnifying glass. And now this has happened to me twice. It's magnifying mirror, excuse me, where I'm sitting there. The first time it happened, I'm sitting there and I'm finding the little eyebrow hairs I want to pluck.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how you see something peripherally out of the side of your eye or something? And I'm looking in the mirror and I see something and I look up and I don't see it again. And then I go back and I start again, and then I smell smoke. And
mm-hmm.
I look up and I'm like, what is that? The magnifying mirror lit my hair on fire.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
what?
And I could not believe it. I could not believe it. When it happened the second time and I saw movement, I looked up in the mirror and I saw white smoke coming out of my hair.
Oh, my God.
All right? Now, I couldn't believe this, so I immediately called like half a dozen of my girlfriends and asked if this had ever happened to them.
Yeah.
Nobody had ever heard of it. I was like, wow, this is nuts, right? So I thought maybe it was just something weird, right?
Yeah.
Well, do you know, last week during that little mini heat wave we had, I did the same thing. It was a weekend. I went outside. I'm sitting there with my magnifying mirror. I start tweezing. Sure enough, the ends of my hair caught fire again.
Oh.
This time, my husband was here to witness it.
Yeah.
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 Have you ever heard of anything like that?
I don't know. Most people, isn't it the children? If you let a child go up and they burn their hand once, they learn not to do it again?
Well, now instead of sitting in the sunlight, now I sit in the shade.
Yeah.
The first time it happened, I could not believe it. I thought maybe I was hallucinating. But it happened again, and this time I had a witness.
Because
this time, I took my husband. I said, now watch. And I did it for him, and sure enough, it happened again.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So that was my fire story.
Okay. Well, that's one of the standard issue in the Boy Scout sort of preparedness kit is a large magnifying glass.
Yeah. Yeah. You can...
And guess what they're used for, Jackie? They're used for starting fires.
Yeah. It wasn't a magnifying glass. It was a magnifying mirror.
Well, it's similar principle.
Yeah. So.
Well, in your case, instead of it just the light passing through it and intensifying, it was reflecting.
Back to a point.
Yep.
At some point, there is a
and apparently it's a good thing it wasn't reflecting it into your eyes.
Well, you know, it's funny because in the past, like sometimes when it's really hot out and the mirror's a certain angle, like it'll be on my skin and I'll feel my skin will get very hot.
Yeah.
You know, I have to pull my face away. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, well, yeah, it is freaky. You stay in the shade when you do that.
Yeah, I'm going to do that from now on.
So, here we go. Let's move on now to the disaster exercise.
The exercise. So we all left for lunch. We took all of our gear with us, cleaned out the place, came back, and I came back a little bit late onto this scene, but I knew that I should check in with the incident commander and get an assignment. But tell us about how it began, George.
The scenario was an earthquake. It conceivably could have been a plane crash. Mm. Had it been a plane crash, there probably would have just been more fires to be put out. Mm-hmm. We had, between live people and mannequins, we had 22 victims. Mm-hmm. There were the 23 of you that started out. Mm-hmm. But of course, you lose four in a command staff, and then you lose some people in other roles as scribes, and then you start breaking people out into search and rescue and medical and setting up a treatment area. So all of a sudden, your 23 people disappear,
mm-hmm.
and you really only have maybe, you know, 6 to 10 that are able to move out and do triage. So they were scattered around. All of our victims were scattered around our public works yard. Mm-hmm. One young man, and I'm so sorry that Nicole's two sons were there, and we ended up killing both of them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was in the container and you know, being overcome by hazardous material vapors, and then the other one was electrocuted.
Mm-hmm.
It was he that, and then one of our other members, Mindy, was also near the electrocuted area. So the young child was on the ground. There were wires over the top of him. Mindy was in a dry spot behind there, but there was all of this water that was also there. And we speak all the time about electricity and water. Downed power lines and what they can do in a car accident and how, you know, a little less than a year ago, two women passed away while trying to help a motorist.
Mm-hmm.
And they rushed in. So it's the sizing up and not rushing in. One of the members needed to go help somebody. So she died for about 5 minutes.
Right.
And then we brought her back to life and let her go back to work.
Right.
So she did what you are always telling us not to do. She ran to help and didn't look at the situation.
Yeah, she ended up wandering into the water right there where the power line was laying in there. So in our mind, she was electrocuted.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the extent of which line it was, in true life, it certainly could have just been a very bad tingle, and she might have been able to get out of it. But we're always under the assumption that you do it, you die, and we teach it that way. You just don't want to be anywhere near, downed electrical lines. Stay away from them.
Right.
You were in the medical.
I was assigned to the medical area, we had to receive, we had to assess the people that we received, and then separate them into red and, of course, green were ambulatory, but separate them into red and then also into delayed. And then on command, when the call came, it was time to get all the immediate patients transported. And that was quite an exercise, getting them ready on the boards and transported to the helicopter area. And it took a lot of work just to get, how many did we transport? Maybe 10 or 15?
We did 7 in a helicopter, and then we, it was, I think we had 4 or 5 that we were also able to send out in ambulances.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was a lot of work, and we were given limited amounts of time to do it, and it's just, it's, well, the word that best describes it, chaos.
Oh, Chief has arrived on scene.
Yes. The acronym CHAOS. But it was, it's something that, George, I think we need to practice.
Oh, it all the time.
Yeah.
This is something that always needs to be done. And that's why we do that. We have training throughout the year. In October, we will have our in-house, so to speak, our Manhattan Beach drill. In the past, we've done a number of them combined with the Beach City CERT organizations. But this year, we're all kind of rolling back into our own local.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, we will activate our 4 area command centers.
Mm-hmm.
We will test all of our communications, and we will work with the our neighborhood watch partners,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, those that have gone through the Map Your Neighborhood training,
mm-hmm.
will, and there is a Map Your Neighborhood training class in Manhattan Beach on the 28th of this month, which is this coming Wednesday. So anybody in Manhattan Beach interested, if you contact, I don't have the time yet, but I know that it's there. If you're a block captain or a member of Neighborhood Watch in the city, come join our staff for some training and learn about what you can do in your neighborhood. You can, of course, can always reach me at info@mbcerta.org. And we'll steer you in the right position, right in the right direction, not position, but direction.
Now, the training, this is Map Your Neighborhood on the 28th.
Yes.
A week from tomorrow.
Yes, it is.
A week from tomorrow. Okay.
So Joe, were you on medical during the entire exercise, or did you get a chance to do the other things?
No, actually, I was on medical more or less during the entire exercise. I got there a little bit late. We were supposed to get back at 1. I got back at 1:30 approximately, so I just stayed on medical. And...
Whoa, you mean I shouldn't have – you shouldn't have graduated?
Oh, I know that I was there somewhere.
Well, you know, when I went through it, I was on a search and rescue team where
they
had a building or room that was – we had to go in and check it.
Yes.
And so we went in with there was a team. You had your partners. And, George, I remember you telling us about – well, they had it all smoky.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The lights were out. It was smoky. There was a bunch of furniture tossed around. You couldn't see where you were going. And the idea was to systematically search. It was one bigger room and then another hallway and maybe another smaller room off of that. So you didn't get to do that, huh?
I didn't.
No, he didn't, but the room was there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was there, yeah. There, we had 3 victims inside there.
Yeah.
So that was still there, let's talk about treatment.
Yeah.
In a true disaster, we as a board, our organization, we're talking about looking to the future. You know, for the first 24 hours, maybe even into 48 hours, there's going to be a lot of chaos. There's going to be a lot of people running around not knowing what to do, and there's going to be injuries. There's going to be search and rescue, a lot of documenting and finding, where are our residents and are they okay?
Mm-hmm.
But after that first 48 hours, there's a good possibility that a good deal of our efforts are going to be comfort and care of our citizens as well as medical.
Mm-hmm.
And so treatment areas are going to be very important in any mass casualty incidences. And of course, this is all going to depend on the time of the day and the day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a school day, our children are going to be in school.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of individuals in certain specific areas. If it's an evening, everybody's going to be at home. If it's in the middle of the night, and I will say we've been quite lucky that all of our major incidents that we've had so far this year have been early mornings in the 4 or 5 o'clock range. If it's on a weekend, maybe it's going to be shopping malls that are busy and have more individuals. It'll depend on if it's a sunny day or a rainy day. So there's a lot of factors, and a treatment area down the road. People are not going to be able. They're not going to want to go to a hospital. They're going to think they want to go to a hospital, unless you truly are having a life-threatening reaction to something or an injury. And what are those three life-threatening?
Yes. First and foremost, when you're triaging, it's airway or breathing. That's number one. Number two is bleeding. You must stop bleeding. And in a sterile way, as sterile a way as possible, but it doesn't matter if you can't be sterile, then stop the bleeding, because infection will take days to set in, but bleeding will take your life in minutes. So bleeding. And then, of course, shock, which could be the shock of the event or actually physical shock because of bleeding. And of course, the obstruction of airway and so forth. Once that's resolved, you have to check for shock.
There you go. All right. He was listening, Jack.
I was.
what is that one? What is that acronym? RPM or something like that?
RPM, respiration,
right,
perfusion.
Okay.
And mental status. Right. And then the other side of that also, other than RPM, would be
32 can do.
32 can do.
32.
And the 30 is?
Heartbeats per minute.
30. Right, okay. Less than 30 respirations per minute.
Correct, 30 respirations per minute.
The 2?
Is when you put the fingertip to see how fast the blood comes back.
Right, perfusion. Right. And, of course, if it's a young woman or so that has nail polish on, then go to the palm of the hand,
right?
All right, and press that. And when you press on your hand, the blood gets pushed away, and when it returns, it wants to return in less than 2 seconds. And then the can do, of course, goes to the mental status and the shock.
Right.
Can somebody tell them who their name is, the day, what time it is, and not necessarily what time, where are they?
Mm-hmm.
That's the three killers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to be able to prevent. And that's not to say that things won't change down the road, but if we can stop the bleeding, there may be a lot of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody may have a lot of discomfort, and it may take a day or so for somebody to be able to come and react and help. But those are the things that we as true first responders, we as the people in the field, when something like this happens, will be able to do for ourselves, our families, our neighbors, our residents.
So Joe, did you actually do any medical treatment, or were you just triaging people?
No, now we weren't actually doing the triage. That was occurring prior to them reaching the treatment center. Our responsibility in the treatment center was to do a head-to-toe assessment to find out if there were other injuries beyond what was obvious, to interact with the patients, to, you know, if they were alert, to verify that and so forth. And then also just to be ready to transport. So we were doing the further assessments head to toe, documenting who we had, red, yellow, delayed, red is immediate, and green is ambulatory, and black, of course, are the deceased. And there was a morgue. We had to make sure that the people got to the morgue appropriately, and comfort, you know, and that's what we do in treatment, but not
okay.
Triage necessarily. Yeah.
So how many dead people did you have?
We had a number, both mannequins and deceased. The one boy was so good. He was he was identified as dead, and he waited near the morgue. I didn't want to put him in the morgue, but he waited near the morgue very, very patiently, and I don't know, maybe six or seven out of
There were six.
Six, yeah.
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 And how was your first experience with dealing with the dead?
You know, Jackie, it's I have to tell you, this is a quick personal experience. Is when I was young, my mom owned a gift shop, Terry's Gift Shop, and a gentleman tried to rob the man next door to us, who was a lock and key smith. He got shot. And he died on the sidewalk out front.
Oh, God.
And, you know, it seemed like forever. But obviously the police got there within minutes, and the ambulance got there within 20 minutes. But, I mean, the police got there within a few minutes. They made their assessment by looking at him. Everybody could see he was shot with a shotgun. And he wasn't live, and you didn't need to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. But anyway, so the body laid there for a while, maybe an hour or so. The neighborhood was around. I mean, everybody was there. And so that was my first experience with a dead body.
Oh,
they,
okay.
They covered the body, did they not?
George, this was, I want to say, 35 years ago. The body was not covered, as in my recollection, I was young, but the body was not covered for a good half an hour at least, maybe more. When the coroner got there, they covered the body, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Examining, covering, and then in preparation to remove it, because, of course, there was no treatment necessary.
Right.
But that was amazing. And, you know, we have a caller, so I want to get them in as soon as we possibly can. Caller, last four digits, 3617. Caller, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Who is this?
This is Rosa Koretsky.
Hi.
Classmate for the last training. Good morning. How you doing?
Very good, very good.
Good morning, Rosa. Nice to hear you, and thanks for calling in.
Oh, you're very welcome, Mr. Buck.
Mister. No, thank you. You know better than that. But anyway, tell us, you've called in your experience. Can you shed some additional light here?
Sure. I would just like to add that this was an experience to me, a new experience, and everything I learned from this training, it was great. I feel more prepared than probably I was a month ago, right? So
right.
I get to just probably, I don't know, to put in practice one day, but yeah, I feel more prepared than I was before.
Right. Now, Rosa, we had talked about potentially adding a Spanish language component to something that we do, our Tuesday show, Disaster in America, if we were to do it on another day or whatever. How how concerned are you that other communities that aren't English speaking, how prepared they are for disaster?
Coming from Peru, I was born in Peru, but I've been living here for many years. I think that speaking from a Hispanic community, I think they need to get on this training and being educated more about preparedness. And I feel like this class will be great for them. So myself, I'm looking forward to get involved more with this type of training and keep learning every day, so
right.
I can be able to help myself in an emergency. Not just myself at the community, my kids, my family. I get to volunteer every day for my kids' preschool class, and I've seen at least 20 kids a day in that group of class. And I just, things go through my mind. I say, what if an emergency happens? You know, we need more people to be aware of how to help somebody in an emergency.
Every day it now occurs to me, you know, every environment that I'm in, how prepared is that environment? And I want to ask you, George, if you know, the typical, let's take Costa, typical high school with thousands of students, how, if something were to occur during school time, are they prepared to keep the children there for any length of time, or do they have a set limit and then the children have to go home?
No, to my knowledge, there's not a set limit. They do have supplies. They are set and trained, and they do exercises. They do shelter in place, both for what could be an active shooter, but they also are set up for more lengthy stays if it was an earthquake or something.
So they have water supplies.
They have water, and they have 55-gallon drums. You know, the originators, the founders of More Prepared, put their company together based on we have children in our school system and in our elementary schools, and that was the reason they built this, was to be able to put together supplies for the elementary schools.
Right.
And that's how the girls got started, putting More Prepared together. And our elementary schools have kits for each student in the school. That's something that has been put together for years now.
Right. Wow. Well, Rosa, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Now, tell me, Rosa, what was the one or two things that you think was the most impactful? I mean, what affected you the most?
What impacted me the most from this training?
Yeah,
there were a lot of things that probably that I thought I was ready for, but I wasn't. Just put it off a fire. To me, it was a great opportunity being there with all the trained people, all the firemen, and guiding us. So giving us tips, that was a great thing. So I think that I still need to learn a lot. So that was one major thing that I think I'll still consider it, learning more.
Right.
And the other thing, how can I assist, help somebody in the event that they are in a crash, car accident, whatever, and they're bleeding. So what if the paramedics and the firemen don't arrive in time, right? So as a third, I think we can use the knowledge that we gained in the past few weeks and then be able to assist these people until professionals arrive.
We did learn about the Good Samaritan law here in California and how blessed we are here in California to have a very comprehensive Good Samaritan law with a clear path for us to help people if we have had some training and we do see a clear danger that we can mitigate, we're legally able to do so, and are protected from getting further lawsuits or any other negative effects like that.
Right.
Yeah, so that's good. What about the terrorism training? What did you think about that?
Oh, gosh. Now that it can be everywhere, right? So
yeah.
Whatever I'm walking, it's not like I'm afraid of things. No, I think the more prepared we are, the more knowledge we get, the better. So I see things with better eyes, maybe.
Yeah.
And, I can be aware of things, more aware or what to do when I'm walking in a crowd of people, you know, I just try to be more cautious. So
well,
I think that can be everywhere. We experienced a big one with 9/11, and that I think is going to be stuck in our minds for the rest of our lives, that
right.
We want to be prepared, not just, again, as I said, for ourselves, but maybe for our loved ones, but for our community.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for participating in the class. I enjoyed going through class with you.
Oh, I enjoyed the same, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
You're very welcome. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We have time for a couple of announcements.
Yes, we do.
That we do. We need to. Coming up first, and we just mentioned on the 28th, next Wednesday, I do not have the specifics on a time just yet, but Map Your Neighborhood for Neighborhood Watch personnel in Manhattan Beach. But the next day on 5/29, the National Weather Service of Los Angeles and Oxnard counties have a sky-worn storm spotter training. This will be at the Jocelyn Center, 1601 Valley Drive, Thursday the 29th between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. There's going to be a light lunch served also. Reservations are required. But come learn about what NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, does to train people to have them also watch out. Of course, we don't have a lot of severe weather training here, but they like to know what's going on in our areas. So that is Thursday. If anybody's interested, reservations are at 310-802-5430 for anybody that wants to join in that day. After that, the next town hall meeting that we're going to have will be on June 4th. And Margaret Vincey, who's been a guest a couple of times here with us, will be in Manhattan Beach again at the Jocelyn Center at 1601 Valley Drive to talk about earthquakes, our most recent ones, tsunamis. She puts on a fabulous presentation. That'll be at 6 p.m., June 4th. No reservations required. Just pop into Manhattan Beach, find a place to park, and come visit us. And then, of course, we will have CERT communication training on 6/14 in the community room at the fire and police station. So that's what's coming up big. If you're a resident of Hermosa Beach, get in contact for a in-house Hermosa Beach class on June 6, 7, and 8, the one weekend. And if you're out there listening to us and you want to be a victim, let us know. We will need victims the afternoon of the 8th. And I'll let the rest of it go for now. Thank you.
So is there a CERT organization in Hermosa?
Hermosa has what they call themselves. They have the Hermosa Beach Disaster Service Workers. So it is. We're looking to train those that have gone through some shelter training with the Red Cross. And that's what this class in June will be for. But, yes, they do have a number of CERT-trained personnel there, and we're looking to expand it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, George, for the training and I want to thank all the members of CERT that participated in our training. It was thorough. It was organized. It was just
enlightening.
It was a great experience, George. Thank you for that.
It was, and I am remiss. Next Tuesday morning, the chief of the Redondo Beach Fire Department, Chief Metzger, is going to be with us, and we will have him on the show next Tuesday at 7 a.m.
Excellent. Oh, that's great. That's great. And again, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure.
All right. That's our show. I now feel trained, except I didn't know what lies meant, but I remember now. Limit.
Isolate,
eliminate, and separate.
There you go.
Isolate, eliminate, and separate. Your household chemicals can be quite deadly, if not themselves, but of course in a fire, then they become a part of the hazard. So that's one of the major issues with household chemicals. Thank you very much, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.